Anything worth saying is worth talking about. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, Truth Seekers, we are back for the second and third hour of Deprogram. I'm going to be joined in just a minute by both Matt Rodriguez and CeCe Woods, and we're going to talk about the tragedy in Uvalde. We're going to talk about school shootings, guns, and more. But before I do that, I have one quick story to run past you guys. There is outrage in Houston, Texas this morning in the aftermath of the Uvalde tragedy. The NRA, the National Rifle Association, is preparing to host its annual meeting at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston over Memorial Day weekend. This is an annual thing. They do it every year. It typically does draw protests and activists, but this year especially, because it's just happening a matter of days after that tragedy, people are pretty freaked out and upset about it. So this year, the meeting is expected to gather, and this is blows my mind, like 50,000 plus people at it. They typically have a big crowd. This year, they're going to have Donald Trump, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, Ted Cruz, and other high-profile Republican leaders. They're all scheduled to address the convention. But like I said, there's many groups who are upset about this. So far, we have the Moms Demand Action. We have Indivisible Houston. We have Youth for Beto. We have the Houston chapter of Black Lives Matter. They're all organizing activities at the convention center and nearby to protest the NRA. Ashton P. Woods, who's an activist and founder of Black Lives Matter Houston, no relation to our guest CeCe that I know of. Anyway, this person said, they are not welcome. They're not welcome here. These people are coming into our community. The city of Houston needs to kick them out. We have to be just as tough about these things as they are. And this harkens back to a similar situation that happened in 1999 in Denver, just shortly after the Columbine massacre, which, at least in my mind, was the first tragic school shooting of this type of size that happened in the U.S. that I can remember. And so they were going to have an NRA meeting there in 99. And I believe at the time, the city's mayor even pleaded with them to not do the meeting, but they ended up having it. And it was the one where Charlton Heston famously, you know, made his targeted message that said, you know, from my cold dead hands. So we will see how this goes. I don't imagine that the NRA is going to cancel this meeting, but who knows? Maybe they will. Meanwhile, former President Obama is being criticized for a really tone-deaf tweet that happened yesterday. And basically what he said was, quote, "As we grieve the children of Uvalde today, we should take time to recognize that 2 years have passed since the murder of George Floyd under the knee of a police officer. His killing stays with us all to this day, especially those who loved him." No words, man. You can't make this up. Completely inappropriate, in my opinion, and unhelpful. But that's where we're at today. All right, you're listening to TNT. We're going to be right back with Matthew Rodriguez and CeCe Wood.
Dismantling the woke.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, we're going to get into a deep discussion regarding the tragedy in Uvalde. We're also going to talk about an incident that was similar here in Saugus, California. I am joined by Los Angeles County Sheriff candidate Matthew Rodriguez and our friend and often contributor CeCe Woods. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Michael. Good morning, CeCe. How are you guys?
Hi.
Good. Thank you for great coming to back to us. I wish that we had less grim news, and you're running for sheriff. You've got plenty of things that you could be doing, but we have to address this thing that happened in Uvalde. And you guys catch me up to speed. A similar incident happened in Saugus a while back.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in on this one because I had a very in-depth talk yesterday with someone that is in the department, close source of mine, and he was there, and his children went to that school, and he was in training.
CeCe, what year was this?
2019, just two years ago.
Okay, yeah.
So, because Santa Clarita is such a large law enforcement community, many members of different departments from all over LA County and beyond live in that community. So there was a very swift response to the Saugus shootings. Two teenagers died that day. A big difference in numbers compared to what just happened on Tuesday, tragically. And so, but there is some controversy as to why law enforcement on Tuesday didn't rush, apparently, allegedly, didn't rush into the building fast enough. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen, and I'm going to have Matt jump in here pretty quickly, the person who actually ended up rushing into the building and killing the shooter on Tuesday was an off-duty border control agent who was a member of an elite team, very similar to SWAT. He is trained for these emergency situations. He's ready to rock and roll. When I was talking to my source yesterday, it was similar to the members of SWAT from LAPD and other agencies around Southern California and canine units who bring their gear home and were ready to self-activate. That is very similar to what this man did. He self-activated. He was in his civilian clothes, from what I understand, grabbed his gear and just went. And that happened at Saugus as well. So I think Matt can talk more about this and how, you know, when you're dealing with a shooter that has military grade weapons, it's very difficult for law enforcement officers who are carrying a duty pistol to be able to rush a building and take that on, right? So I don't know. I'm going to let Matt come on in and tell us the procedure behind that and what he feels about that.
Yeah, well, you know, everything changed after Columbine in Colorado. You know, I was in patrol in 1989, 1990. And when we had shootings, active shootings prior to Columbine, there would, what we'd do is we would just hold the perimeter. And that's when you see a containment, and then we'd call SWAT, and the experts would come in with all the, you know, heavy artillery and flak vests and whatever they needed to be able to neutralize that threat safely. But after Columbine and the criticism that came to law enforcement for failing to rush in and neutralize those two young men, everything changed. So we started training with what they call rapid response training, where actually patrol deputies and officers will go in together as a team. It could be two, could be four ideally. And they go in, and that's, you know, where you have to go in and, you know, earn your money and try to neutralize that threat to maintain safety in those classrooms or wherever it might be. So the policy completely changed. Also, if you guys remember, and I know you do, the North Hollywood shootout with the bank robbers, where LAPD was completely outgunned. So those are a long time ago. Every radio car should have an AR-15 in it now to neutralize that, to at least be able to have equal firepower. And then, and I don't know what happened there in Texas. I'm not going to judge if law enforcement remained out on the perimeter and didn't respond. I have doubts about that, at least in this day and age. And if they did, that's not a good thing at all. They should be outfitted with AR-15s in their trunks, and they should be responding to that classroom. That's just what you get paid to do. And that's how the policy's changed since Columbine.
Matt, I to your point, I mean, and I mentioned all this yesterday, it's like whenever these events happen, the initial reports, I take it in, because you know it's an evolving story and details come out. So right now, that's what some of the people, the parents, are saying, is that law enforcement didn't go in, and this Border Patrol officer apparently went in without backup. But I also heard that the law enforcement asked for these people to come. So all I'm just saying is right now, I think we're still waiting for further details, because I've heard different stories on both sides about what went down. Cece, go for it.
Yeah, I do want to touch upon what Matt said. And a few years ago, remember when we had the shootings at the Garlic Festival, and then there was another mass shooting somewhere, and then there was the one in Las Vegas, and mm-hmm. so at that time, I think three of them happened, which was 219, actually it was, and our local station, well, in Malibu, the Lost Hill station, they put together a very specialized training by SWAT, their SWAT, SEB. And so they had an active shooter training and a whole protocol that was ready to put in place. And that included, you know, shooters up in the hills, you know, snipers up in the hills for protection. They were standing out with the SWAT Bearcats out in front of the Malibu Chili Cook-Off, which was huge. Hundreds of thousands of people go to that every year. And so that was really scary because that just happened after the Garlic Festival. But even our local station, all of those deputies, they were ready to rock and roll. I have pictures of deputies that were standing with an AR-15 in front of the Malibu Chili Cook-Off. Some people were pissed off. Why are you going to scare the children? Well, what do you want? Do you want somebody do you want that security to where that might ward off an actual shooter, or do you want to pretend like it just doesn't happen? Right. But they are, I know deputies, they are all ready to, they've got their vests, they've got their AR-15s. They are ready to rock and roll should something go down. So it is a little, you know, I mean, early news reports, people like to speculate like they know what's going on, but they don't really know what's going on with law enforcement. They don't. And law enforcement's not going to tell them. They're going to do their job. And so it is interesting, though, that the actual man who shot and killed the shooter was an actually highly trained a member of a tactical unit that is supposed to be, that has the skills to go in there and take a shooter like that down, who's armed to the teeth, you know, with military grade weapons.
Matt, if something like this happened here in LA right now, let's just say, you know, in Hollywood or what have you, what would be the chain of events that would happen with law enforcement? Okay, we've discovered that, because in the Uvalde situation, apparently this guy gets past someone who is a guard at the front. So I don't know how that happened. Apparently the kid had body armor on. He's got, you know, this exotic weapon. Somehow he gets past the guy. But now we know there's an active shooter on premises. What is the next chain of events that would happen with law enforcement here in Los Angeles?
Well, I think today, like I said, you know, first responders coming from patrol, they're going to go into the back of their radio car. They're going to grab their AR-15. They're going to get two, maybe four of them. They're going in. That's good. Just the way it is now. It's such a sad commentary. And I take all the news reports with a grain of salt. I saw a piece today where the perimeter was set up and the cops were, it was obviously, it just happened and the parents were just arriving. And the reality of that, and that could have been, what, 10 minutes, 15 minutes from when the guy arrived on campus. But you and I both know it's already over. But the emotions of the parents was just so heartbreaking. I mean, we all have kids or we've had kids growing up. I couldn't imagine showing up at the school with yellow tape around the school and I can't cross that perimeter, not knowing what's going on with my 5-year-old or 10-year-old in that school. So emotions are charged. You know, when the suspect is dead, who do you blame? You know, so you know, people start get emotional and they start lashing out at the police because they didn't move fast enough. But it's a sad commentary on our society. But here's the reality. If these shootings are taking place, then you need to harden the targets. I was in Israel. I trained in Israel, counterterrorism with the Israeli Defense Forces and also with the Secret Service. And here's what happens when you go into Israel, because they're surrounded by hostility. You go into a supermarket, you got to go through a metal detector. And I'm not saying this is cool, but this is what the reality of it is there. Mm-hmm. You go through the metal detector and, you know, there's a guy standing there, most likely with an assault weapon and just guarding the store. And unfortunately, if these schools are under siege like this, you might have to put a fence around them, 10-foot fence, a wrought iron, and one gate in, one gate out. And, you know, maybe a security officer there who's armed, and maybe some teachers that are armed, prepared to neutralize the threat. I'm just saying, people said, when is this going to stop? How's it going to stop? Well, you know, how about we talk about first protecting them, and then we'll figure out a way. Because if this guy can just roam onto campus with military grade weapons and tactical gear, that's, to me, in this day and age, that's a problem.
Yes. Cece, you wanted to add something?
Yeah. So based on what my source told me about the Saugus incident, there were parents who showed up. They're panicked. They need to see their kids. One parent could actually see their kid in the distance. And this deputy had to just keep the area contained. And, you know, the parent is saying, I want my daughter. I want to get to my daughter. And he explained to me, he said, you know, they have to take a head count of children, and they need to make sure all the children are safe. There's like, in that school, it was 2,700 kids, right? Something like that. Anyway, they have to take a head count. So they want to put all the kids back on their buses, figure out who's missing, who fudged a slip to, you know, skip school. You know, they have to take in so many different factors, and parents don't understand, you know, that type of protocol. So it just makes the whole situation chaotic, just, you know, from the get-go. And he even told me, he said, the campus looked like a tornado hit. Backpacks everywhere, phones everywhere, kids cramming into tiny little spaces where they would never, you wouldn't think that, you know, 30 kids could fit in this tiny little room. Yeah, well, you know what, they fit into that tiny room. And then it's going room by room and making sure they can find each one of these kids. It's a very, very difficult process, aside from the trauma of it all. It's trying to keep everybody contained. And so procedures, I think even with Saugus, I don't think these schools have really figured out how to streamline these types of emergencies. I think they somewhat train for active shooter, but they don't have a real protocol in place that allows the misinformation from getting out of control. And the plan to just keep everything as streamlined as possible, keep everybody as calm as possible. I think they need to do a lot of that, as well as the security part of securing down a campus. These campuses are wide open, all kinds of land. Anybody can jump on. Any kid can ditch school. It's like, there's just so many components to making these schools safe enough, aside from keeping out a shooter.
Yeah, no, but also, Michael, just real quick, I talked about the first responders. Then after that, the phone goes over to the SWAT teams, and they're rolling in either helicopters or from, you know, the teams that are on duty, and then the investigators. And let's just face it, it's mass chaos after that. But I don't know how you could control that aspect of it, or misinformation. But the reality of it is, in a scenario like that, there's the number one priority is stop that threat.
And the rest of it
is just aftermath. Mm-hmm.
This town, Uvalde, it's not a very big town. You know, it's just a small Texas town. I think it's a largely Hispanic community. So, you know, I doubt that they had a sophisticated law enforcement infrastructure. They just had a police department. And so they called upon this border control group, because they're already close to the border. I think they're almost, this little town of Uvalde, I think, was equidistant to San Antonio and the border, mm-hmm. which is like 60 to 80 miles on each side. So those people are in the immediate perimeter. So however the call went out to the border control people, whether it was akin through a parent or the law enforcement made it, I still want to give law enforcement the benefit of the doubt that they did what they did with what they had to work with. And, you know, like I say, I mean, whenever these things happen, whenever a tragedy like this happens, I'm always really try to be very careful what I take in from the media, because it's the details are arriving. Already I've seen people just get things wrong about this, or speculate about it. So for right now, I want to give law enforcement the benefit of the doubt that they did what they could in the time that they had.
Yeah, you know, and Michael, I can't speak to what's going on in Texas, but I can tell you this. I was assistant chief of police and interim chief of police up in Santa Paula, which is a very small primary Latino community. Lots of crime, lots of gang activity. You're sort of a farm, almost farm worker type environment. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't that far from the Saga shooting. And I was working there as assistant chief of police when that shooting occurred, which I, you know, probably in a radio car, I could have got there in 15 minutes to a Saga. But don't underestimate those small police departments, man. Those guys train, they got heavy weaponry. They're tactical, and they know they're kind of on their own when they're small like that. So it's like one of those deals. Hey, this is we're on our own here, so we better be as good as we can possibly be. I can't speak to that police department over there. I'm sure this was an unthinkable tragedy of proportions that they never even could have dreamt of. But I, you know, I'm sure they did the best they could. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt until I hear otherwise. But if it does trickle out and it's factual that they just remained on the perimeter, then, you know, then they're way behind the times. But I find that hard to believe in 2022.
Understood. We're going to take a quick break. I'm speaking with Matthew Rodriguez. I'm speaking with CC Woods. We're talking about the tragedy that happened in Uvalde, Texas. This is Deep Program. You're listening to TNT. We'll be right back.
You should hear what Hervoy Morich is talking about.
This morning, I woke up to discover I've permanently been banned by a PayPal, as well as a number of other podcasters and writers, which is, you know, one of the principal ways I've been funding my Geopolitics of Empire podcast, the other thing that I work on. You know, it's clear for me that this direction has come from the U.S. government, likely the Pentagon, to Silicon Valley. You know, I don't think it's PayPal making the decision. It's the government. Right. This is a textbook example of fascism. So it's 2022, and I'm openly experiencing fascism.
Hervoy Morich on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Nearly every day, we hear dire predictions about climate change from the media establishment, Hollywood, and politicians. They tell us that the world is coming to an end because normal human activity is raising the temperature to dangerous levels. To avoid a hellish apocalypse, they warn us we must immediately change our lifestyles and our very way of life. But are these sensational claims based on solid empirical science? Do the facts line up with the hype? Well, an increasing number of scientists are becoming skeptical. We covered what many of these scientists had to say in our first groundbreaking film, Climate Hustle. From overhyped claims about severe weather events, temperatures, rising sea levels, and even disappearing polar bears, Climate Hustle peeled back the hype and looked at the facts, facts that simply don't add up to any reason for alarm. So this begs the questions. Why would those claiming a global warming catastrophe spread a false narrative? What would motivate them? Why would they try to hustle you? Are they trying to control the climate or you? Well, those are the questions we're going to explore in this film. And the answers may shock you. Order your DVD, Blu-ray, or digital copy today of Climate Hustle 2.
To find out more, go to climatehustle2.com.
The strength of our country hasn't just been won on the battlefield. It's won every day in our communities when we come together in our toughest times. For over 100 years, the American Legion has been strengthening communities across our nation by providing life-saving help and support to our veterans and neighbors during times like we're facing today. We are the American Legion, Veterans Strengthening America. To learn how you can help, visit legion.org.
Get breaking news on your phone when it happens.
Download our app from the Google Play and App Store now.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Deep Program. I am your host, Michael Parker. I am speaking with Los Angeles County Sheriff Candidate Matt Rodriguez. I'm also speaking with CC Woods, who's the editor-in-chief of The Current Report and the local Malibu and a few other periodicals. And Matthew, one thing I was going to ask, you mentioned early in the first segment that police cars don't have these powerful long rifles in the car. Sometimes they've got a handgun.
No, if I said that, no, not at all. They should all be.
I misunderstood, perhaps.
Yeah, no, they should all be equipped with this weaponry. And this is not a new discussion. I mean, this started back, like I said, Columbine. We have to even the threat. We got to have a weapon that's just as powerful as the one they have. So all the radio cars should have an AR-15 in it. And when the North Hollywood shooting was going on, the LAPD was shooting these guys left and right with 9mm. They had they were all armored up, and the rounds were just bouncing off of them. So that's when LAPD ended up rushing into a gun store and got some semi-automatic rifles and ended up neutralizing the suspect. One of them took his own life. So, yeah, this has been a discussion for at least 20 years. We've had those rifles in the car.
Good. As you should. Cece wanted to add something.
Yeah. So when I was speaking with my source about Saugus, they had to, thankfully, they were able to mobilize quickly in terms of just the law enforcement community. So they have the Santa Clarita Sheriff's Station there, which is LA County. But most of these people who were self-activating were LAPD, San Bernardino, you know, Burbank, Glendale. They were all grabbing their vests. They were in shorts and tank tops and flip-flops, but they grabbed their vest, they put on their identifying law enforcement patch wherever they could find one to make sure everybody knew they were an officer. They grabbed their AR-15s and they went in to get a handle on the situation. Even at one point, because they didn't have SWAT there yet, one of the deputies stopped a garbage truck and said, "I may need to use your garbage truck, you know, as a protection
battering ram." Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, these good guys, thinking. They know how to get real creative when it comes to that stuff. And yes, they were all, the patrol deputies all had their AR-15s. They were all armed with some powerful machinery, weaponry to take down the suspect if need be. So it's interesting to find out. I wonder how many other departments other than the Border Patrol agent tactical team were close enough to be able to respond, you know, to the shooting on Tuesday.
What would you think, Matt?
I think everybody goes. It's all hands on deck. I mean, like I said, it sounds like a rural area. I've never heard of the town. I guess Matthew McConaughey was born there. Yep. But, it's just all hands on deck. And I can tell you, a place like Saugus, I know Santa Clarita very well. There's a few towns that are just cop-centric, and that's one of them. There's a lot of firefighters and law enforcement there. And I can tell you, there's probably a significant number of deputies that would run in there with shorts and flip-flops on, knowing their kids are in there with a handgun. And I guarantee there's probably some that would run in there without a handgun.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is. I know that. That's what I would do. I think just emotion would overcome me. And, you know, so, yeah, it's a sad commentary on where we're at today. And there's so many facets to it. Like Cece was saying, security, guns, mental health. And I'm gonna throw this out here, Michael. You'll appreciate this. When I was in Santa Paula, we had a school resource officer. He's the busiest guy at the station. Because, you know, high school, and we haven't been in high school in a while, so it's probably a lot different now with social media and what have you. And that guy was the busiest guy. You were dealing with drama every day. You know, this guy threatened this guy. This girl's fighting with this girl. Somebody had a weapon. There's intelligence that he's pissed. He's going through a breakdown. They broke up with this girl and that and threats. That guy was, it was unbelievable how busy that school resource officer is.
Well, Uvalde is kind of closer to Central Texas. I'm from, I'm a bit north of that, but the terrain is similar. And I haven't seen a lot on the school itself, but I can tell you from what I can see, it looks like the Texas that I grew up in, which is, man, it's just flat. So my point is that this kid, because there is some video footage of the kid approaching the school. So this is a lot of different schools in a lot of different places where someone can come up from almost all sides, unless you've got some kind of perimeter of a fence or something. I just put that out there because, listen, I hate to think of schools being fortified in such a way, But now, and I'm thinking about the schools that I went to in my part of Texas. Yeah, anybody could have walked up from any direction on around that school. And I came from a very small rural area as well, actually smaller than Uvalde. But this makes me think of what we need to do, what we should do. Cece sent me a text yesterday of a article that had come from George Gascon back in July of 2020, who at the time was calling for the removal of Los Angeles police from the school system because it was intimidating to students of color. And I mean, I don't know what has happened with that since. Maybe you guys can bring me up to speed, but it just seems insane given the current state of events.
We had, during that time when it was, we'll call it, be straight about it, the defunding of police was, defunding of law enforcement seemed to be a very popular thing, you know, shortly after the George Floyd incident. But we had a chief of police from the LA school district. He stepped down because he said, hey, I remember this. He said, I'm not going to run this police department with a 30% reduction in my resources. I cannot keep the LA Unified School District safe without 30% of my manpower. And I remember that person stepping down, and then this call for removing school resources. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And, you know, I stand up to this. I was in Chatsworth the other day at an NAACP forum. They confronted us with defunding of the police. And it's interesting because, you know, I am the only law and order candidate. I'm the only stated Republican conservative in this race. I looked the guy right in his eyes, and I was the only candidate that said this, by the way. I said, I'm not defunding the police. I'm not. I'm a law and order man, dedicated my entire adult life to keeping victims safe, innocent victims. And until you show me a model of law enforcement that shows that when you remove law enforcement from the community, that it gets safer, until you show me that. And I said, I haven't seen it in this lifetime. With all due respect, I'm not defunding the police.
Amen. Cece, did you want to add to that about the Gascon thing?
Yeah. First of all, every single directive he's put forth has blown up in his face. To the point where he's had to backtrack everything. That link was sent to me yesterday by Deputy District Attorney Jonathan Hatami, who has been very outspoken against his boss, George Gascon, and will be joining us next week. Excellent. And everything about George Gascon is to degrade and embarrass and eradicate law enforcement. That's what he's about. He wants to take him out, period.
Yeah.
The fact that the George Floyd incident happened within days of this, and President Obama thought that it was more appropriate to acknowledge George Floyd over the 26 people that were killed on Tuesday.
We're over 20 for sure.
Somewhere along that, in between 21 and 26, somewhere around there, two children, two teachers, and all those children, those poor little children. Yeah. So the life of one man to him was more important than the lives of all of these people. He didn't have to single anybody out. He could have very easily included both of them. George Gascon, same brainwaves. He functions in a anti-law enforcement environment, and clearly so did Barack Obama by making the statement that he made instead of acknowledging what happened on Tuesday. In my opinion, my humble opinion, it just was so inappropriate to disrespect the families over the George Floyd incident. I don't even think he acknowledge the Tuesday shooting at all.
He just mentioned it in passing. This was part of a thread, and he did get heavily criticized for it, which he should have. Good. But the Gascon thing, it's like, my concern, this is, the guy's just a factory of terrible ideas, right? So if seriously, it's like he spews them constantly.
Very well put.
And if he's not recalled, CC, I mean,
they have the signatures, Michael. They have the signatures.
I thought
they
were about 50,000
signatures.
Okay. Huh? I know that we have a month. I know that we have a month, and I thought that we were about 50,000 short. I'm with you. I think it'll happen. It has to happen, because if it didn't,
my sources have told me they have the signatures without question. They are the inside ready. They're inside of the recall. You know, the people involved in the recall have told me they have the signatures. They have them. Great. And they have the money.
Here's my concern. And Michael, I signed that recall petition. I'm the only candidate that signed the recall petition against George Gascon, because, and I just say this, it may sound cliche, Geico, but there's no justice in his system. So if that's a justice system in his mind, then that's not my type of justice system. I believe criminals need to be held accountable. There has to be a consequence to committing a crime. But my only thing about this recall petition is they better have a lot of signatures, because what I had to do to get nominated or whatever to be on the ballot, you have to either pay $3,000 or you got to go out and get 10,000 signatures, right? So I paid the $3,000, and they said, all right, go get 40. Get 20 signatures, but you need to get 40 just in case some of them don't fly. Mm-hmm. They sent me back, and the 40 I got were from friends and family. Okay. So it's not like I just stood in front of Trader Joe's and they kicked it back and said, hey, well, you passed, you're good. 26 of your signatures, counted. I said, 26 out of 40. So my advice to that recall commission, because you're dealing with that registrar recorder over in Norwalk. And, there's a lot of questions about the whole voter process, right? So my advice to that recall committee is to get a hell of a lot of signatures, because just from my own little sampling, I don't know what their criteria is. I mean, I don't know if you go over a line or something, they throw your signature out. I don't know what it is. Very good odds.
Well, I can tell you that I went through my own recall in Malibu with some Malibu City Council people, and the backdoor dealings by local government, whether it's our little local municipality or LA County, if they don't want something to go through, they will do their damnedest to make sure it will not go through. So it doesn't matter whether your signatures are valid or not valid. However, from what I have been told by the people involved with the recall, is that they absolutely have what they need to get him out. Now, the bigger issue is, look at what happened with Newsom. They did that recall, what, two or three times? Probably at least two. And they finally got all the signatures. Finally. Nobody showed up at the polls to get him out, for goodness sakes. Okay? Right. So now that's where we're at, really. We'll get those signatures. But come November, y'all better turn out. Yes. I mean,
well,
Newsom was a little less important on some level to get out, because we're talking about public safety and our lives are at stake with Gascon being the district attorney.
The challenge is this. You know, I understand like 70% came out for the Newsom recall, but here's the challenge. You're asking people to remove someone who they elected, it's a very blue county. So you're asking them to take out a guy that they voted for. So that's the challenge.
Well, I mean, I think that he came in, I think a lot of people did not know much about him. I actually didn't vote for him because I had heard scuttlebutt about him, because I'm one of those wild and crazy guys that read stuff on the internet. And so I didn't vote for him, but I think most people didn't know who he was, and the other candidate, a lot of people didn't like. So, you know, that was all the information they need. It's like, we got enough about this one that we don't like this person. We don't know who that person is. So we vote anyway. Now we're stuck with the guy, and I don't personally see how anybody could be worse. And I will say it, so you guys don't have to, I think he's doing the job that he was put in there to do, which is basically just dissolve the fabric of our society locally. But we're coming up on, we got a quick break. Cece, did you want to say something before we go to the advert?
I mean, people did not do their homework. And that was the bigger problem in this last election. If you did any homework on George Gascon, you would see what a failure he was in multiple other cities and how he was booted. Okay. Yep. So that is part of the problem with voters not doing their homework. And so that's how he got in. And, you know, the pro defunding the law enforcement group pushed heavily for him. He just got in right at the right time. People were not paying attention to anything, his background, nothing. They were paying attention to George Floyd. They were paying attention to get police off the streets. We don't want them anymore. And that's why he's like, oh, I'm going to reform everything. No.
Yeah, we do not need any more reimagining.
I can't even speak. It's so bad, you know.
Right. If they say they're going to reimagine anything else, No, we don't need any of that. I'm speaking with Matthew Rodriguez. I'm speaking with CC Woods. This is Deep Program on TNT. We're taking just a couple of minutes, pay some bills, run some ads. We'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The most recent GOP primary candidate endorsements didn't go completely to plan for former President Donald Trump. Of the 27 Trump-endorsed candidates across Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, and the Texas runoffs, the vast majority won, but a few lost, which would be a significant blow for Trump. For instance, Trump-endorsed candidate for Georgia Governor David Perdue, who put up a challenge to current Governor Brian Kemp, but Kemp easily won with 74% of the vote. Perdue only managed to get 22%. Trump endorsed Perdue largely because he fought to overturn the 2020 presidential election result. Kemp did not. But the focus on this issue was not enough. Perhaps voters were not impressed that Perdue bought up to $260,000 worth of Pfizer stock in late February 2020, 1 week before the Trump administration publicly announced the deal with Pfizer. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
G'day, Bob's Removals.
Oh, hi. I have a TV I'd like to move.
Just a TV?
Yes.
Where to?
Over near the window.
Right.
You wouldn't call a removalist just to shift your telly, would you? So why call an ambulance when it's not really needed and your doctor, pharmacist or 13 Health could help? Remember, only call 000 for an ambulance if you believe it's life-threatening, critical or serious. Authorised by the Queensland Government, Brisbane.
This is today's news talk and the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
This is the program. I am your host, Michael Parker. I'm speaking with Matt Rodriguez. He is a Los Angeles County Sheriff's candidate in the upcoming June 7th primary. I'm speaking with CC Woods, the editor-in-chief of The Current Report and the local Malibu. And we're talking about the tragedy that happened in Uvalde, the fallout that's coming from it. Matt, so now, as always happens every time these tragedies occur, now we are moved into the blame Republicans phase. You are the only Republican running for sheriff here in Los Angeles. And, you know, I'm registered as Republican basically so that I could vote. Many years ago, I needed to register Republican so I could vote for Ron Paul. But anyway, I'm still on record as Republican. But now we're at this phase. I jumped on social media and I had to immediately jump right off because it was just, you know, this is all our fault. How do we fix this?
Well, you know, I always like to place the blame on the suspect who actually went out and murdered people.
Imagine that. Know,
and then, you know, if we want to reverse engineer this thing and figure out, okay, what can we do to prevent this from happening again? I'm willing to have that discussion, but you know, you're not blaming any particular party. And I know, you know, the scene was still active and the gun control calls were already being made. And, you know, and here's the reality of this. And here's why I have real issues with gun control. The only people that gun control impacts are law abiding citizens.
Right.
That's it. So it just restricts you from being able to possess a weapon, which is afforded to you under the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, which is your God-given right to possess and bear arms, which shall not be infringed upon. So they put all these restrictions in place, and do the criminals say, okay, well, wait a minute, now that gun control's in place, let me make sure I'm abiding by all the laws. No. And I point to up in Sacramento, that shooting was occurred a couple months ago. There was like 6 guns involved in that. Every single one of them was illegal. Stolen, no serial number, serial numbers ground down, illegal ammunition in the possession of felons. So the gun control thing just doesn't work for me. I'm interested in arming good civilians so they can neutralize threats and protect themselves.
Cece.
So in the Saugus school shooting, the 16-year-old had a ghost gun with no serial number. A 16-year-old. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you control that? Right. How does a 16-year-old in Saugus get a ghost gun? How? Please explain that. Because the more gun control that we actually do have, the more, it's just like anything that's not readily available, there's going to be a black market for it, and it's going to grow, and it's going to grow, and it's going to grow, and until it's, you know, out of control, which it already is out of control, but it could get a lot worse.
I was wondering, I was like, so, okay, so we got this kid, supposedly he buys these weapons on his 18th birthday. So I had to go back in to get some Texas. I was like, so what are the rules in Texas? Well, apparently to get a handgun, you'll need a permit. To get a long gun, you don't need a permit. And there's no waiting period in both cases. So it's my home state. I got a lot of love for Texas. But I will say, hey, a background check and a waiting period, I could get behind that. Apparently there's no waiting period in Texas. And the other thing is, I don't know who sold him these guns. So if this were a business as opposed to like a gun dealer or something, I don't know how this transaction took place. I can't find anything on it yet, but I would just call upon gun dealers as well. It's like, hey, come on, man, we've got a kid with long hair that clearly looks disassociated. And he's buying body armor. I don't know where he got the body armor from. Maybe not from the same dealer, but apparently he spent in excess of around $5,000 on all of this stuff. So I don't, Matt, did you want to say something?
But look, it doesn't matter if you had a 10-day waiting period. This kid, from what I understand, was glorifying weapons when he was even younger. And he said, hey, these are my dream guns. When I'm of age, this is what I want to get. He posted them. And, but you know, here's the reality.
I didn't know that part.
How many, yeah. Michael, but here's the thing. How many assault weapons, let's just focus on AR-15s, are there in this country? There's millions of them. Okay.
Right.
Just millions. And this guy who was having issues, even his grandfather, who he lived with, because he shot his grandmother in the face, mm-hmm. his grandfather didn't even know he purchased the weapons. His grandfather apparently said he didn't see any problems with the kid. I understand he had just walked away from his job. He had been bullied. He had a speech impediment. I don't know how much of this is true, but it just seems to fit the pattern that it's always that awkward kid who's been bullied, who's spinning out of control. But I'm going to tell you, a waiting list, the kid had already waited since he was probably 16. He could have waited 10 more days. He didn't have any 5150 background. He didn't have any criminal background. So the discussion is not just about guns. The discussion is about the community. You know, you got to have, let's start with this. See something, say something. Who's the best people in play to be able to report that, hey, that kid might be a problem? The students. They know him better than anybody. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you got the students. Then you got the school officials, school administrators, parents, law enforcement. If they're not communicating, then this is just going to continue to happen. And as a parent, when you see your kid spinning out of control and he's fascinated by weapons and he's maybe gaming a lot, and then another part of this falls on the media, what do they report? Oh, this one was bigger than the last one. So all these guys just want to do is have a bigger kill count. Like they think they're playing Call of Duty or something, So it's like, oh, I want to outdo the last guy. The racist guy over in Buffalo, he just wanted to outdo the guy in Norway. He got fascinated by that guy. They live in their room. They create this environment on the internet. They create their own reality and they go out and act upon it. So I'm sorry, but a 10-day waiting list isn't going to change that.
You're probably right. Cece.
I do have something to say about the application process and the permit process. I had a very unfortunate event happen in my life with a close friend who was the girlfriend of my ex-husband at the time before my ex-husband and I got together. We were very close friends, all three of us. She was a firefighter and she was diagnosed with bipolar and with severe depression, was not maintaining it because she did not want the fire department to find out about her illness. Okay. She was close with her dad. Her dad loved guns. Okay. She wanted to go out and shoot with her dad. Loved the guns. Went out and she already had a history of committing, attempting suicide. I believe for sure was in the hospital. I'm pretty sure 5150. She went and got she went to a gun store, filled out the gun application and lied on it, got herself a gun. And one night she blew a gasket and blew her brains out. She had a mental health episode, a bipolar episode. So you can lie. The process of the gun applications and verifying information and looking into people's background, that's a whole other issue that needs to be addressed.
I agree. And I take Matt's point. Absolutely. Another thing that I found out about Texas that you had to be 21 to get a handgun, but you could get a long gun when you're 18. And I would argue that, let's make the long gun 21 years as well. And even with the 10-day waiting period, sometimes, because Matt's right, a person that's going to commit a crime is going to commit a crime. But maybe in the case of someone like your friend, maybe if they go and purchase the gun with the intent to do themselves harm on that day, and now they have to wait 10 days to get it, maybe that can help. So I don't know. I'm with Matt. I don't know how much gun control is even helpful, but I do see some room for some reasonable gun control. When I purchased a gun at the beginning of COVID, I don't even like guns, man. I grew up with a ton of guns in my house, but to me, it was just part of life because I lived on a farm. I wasn't even interested in it. But finally, I was like, when COVID started, I was like, things may get crazy. I need to defend my family. So I went and purchased a gun. And then I had a couple of handguns that were within my family as well. So, I got the license. I waited the 10 days. I did what they asked me to do. I had no problem with that. But now, we're looking at this situation where everybody immediately freaks out and says that we're not doing enough. We're not doing enough, and they politicize this, which rubs me wrong. It's a tragedy any way you slice it. We've got like 2 or 3 minutes before the end of this segment. Do you guys have comments before we go to the ads? Because we still have another hour to discuss this, and there's a lot to talk about.
Matt?
I just multifaceted. It involves mental health. It involves guns. It involves parenting. It involves oversight. It involves administration in the schools, hardening of the school. I mean, we could talk for days on it. It's a tremendous tragedy. A lot of people's lives have changed that day and not for the better. And but there's it's a great conversation. I'm glad that I'm a part of it. So thank you, Michael. But it's just not easy to talk about because it's so it's terribly tragic.
I wish
I agree with that. And I do have to say that I do believe that some of the responsibility is definitely on the gun store owners. They should be using far better judgment, especially when a kid like that walks in. If you're not intuitive enough to go, something might not be okay here, or at least do something or put some type of barrier in place to be able to prevent a situation like this. And that's the bigger issue for me. You could stop it right there.
I think that's far too idealistic. I mean, what are you going to have? We reserve the right to refuse service in a gun store. A kid walks in with long hair and you go, nah, I'm not selling it to you, dude. Your federal firearms license would be gone so fast. You wouldn't even know what to do. Because they were, you discriminating against me because I have long hair?
But responsible gun store owners, there's still got to be something. I mean, look, if you go to a business here in Southern California, they have the right to refuse you service. So
that's an interesting discussion. I'm not sure that that would work, but
right,
you know.
Well, and let's continue on. I'm going to take a break. Cece and I are kind of coming from the same place. It's like, listen, if you can now, if you're going to be able to sue the gun maker, then yeah, let's also go to the point of contact at which the transaction happened. This is TNT. My show is Deprogrammed. We're coming back for another hour discussing guns, gun policy, the Los Angeles sheriff race, which Matthew Rodriguez is part of. Cece's trying to act like she's going to leave. We'll have to see what happens. All right. Okay. Cece,
I'm gonna let you,
thank you for being here.
Discuss guns.
Okay. All right. All right. We'll be back in just a minute. Okay. Cheers. Thank you, Cece.